Hello, welcome to the Jordan School District Board of Education study session. Today is Tuesday, March 24th, 2026, and present in the boardroom at this time are all members of the board except for Bryce Demford, who will be joining us soon, as well as our superintendent, associate superintendent, business administrator, and board attorney. Welcome, and thanks to those who are joining from home and those who are here in person. We're going to kick off this meeting with a discussion on an exception request to Administrative Policy AA414, which is student overnight travel. We'll invite Brad Sorensen and Thomas Gavin to the mic.
Okay, well, thank you for having us bring this forward. I'm excited to have Mr. Gatton here with me as we're here to answer any questions and thoughts that you have. But as you see in board books, the request has come from the track and field team at Harriman High School, where they are looking for an exception to be able to attend a second long trip, if you will. I'm not sure how we want to phrase it, but this particular one is set to go to Portland, Oregon. They already are slated to attend a trip in Arcadia, California with the entire track team. This particular one would be limited to just a select number of the track athletes to go and compete in the Portland, Oregon one. And so I'm going to turn some time over to Mr. Gatton and just kind of, he's had conversations with his coach, and other than what you've been able to read in there with their rationale and justification as to, you know, their desire to attend this particular competition as well. So
ultimately, it is a select group, and those kids haven't been decided yet based on times that they are running in track meets right now. But a lot of what is there is true, that they do compete at a lower elevation. It's open up to all 9th and 12th grade students that achieve levels of times that qualify for this particular tournament. They will be running against some of the most prestigious athletes in the country. This is a national tournament that they would not have at the level within the state of Utah as far as the invite goes, to compete against the best and to set high qualifying marks is the goal for this team. There is, as you can see, there is fundraising involved as well, too, and the fundraising is going very well to help compensate for this trip as well. It's projected that 50% of the cost of the trip is going to be fundraised. And also, we've been looking at the total cost that these athletes have been competing in with their two St. George trips, the Arcadia trip. And a lot of these athletes compete in the fall as well with the cross country. In looking at some of the top athletes that have gone to all those competitions, the cost is still very low. We've looked at some that are just under $2,000 for all the meets that they've had to pay. And so we still feel like this would be a doable trip to gain the experience on the national level with the team that we have and the qualifiers that may happen.
So we're here seeking your permission to allow this group to move forward with what they have submitted as a request to potentially compete at the Portland, Oregon competition held on April 23rd through the 25th. I've also added in there in the board books, in addition to this, just so you can see the different competitions that the groups have competed in. I know cross country and track and field are separate seasons. They're separate. So, but you do have a lot of the same kids who compete in those, which is why I thought it was valuable for you to have your eyes on. These are the same families that are competing, but this is what we refer to as a two-sport athlete. So
questions, board members?
Can you talk to me about the grade requirements for student athletes? That they're expected to maintain a certain GPA, is that right?
Yeah, within the UHSA, they're required to maintain at least a 2.0 GPA to be able to compete prior to the season starting. So that's the qualifier, and then of course we have grade breaks during the season. So we have the quarter that's ending this week actually, and so they still have to maintain a 2.0 minimum.
Okay.
With no more than one F. And that's the state requirement. Now, coaches do have the discretion on holding their kids to a higher standard, but I am not particularly aware of if Coach Souls holds them to a higher standard. But a lot of these kids are really, really good students as well.
So is it not a concern for you or staff that these students who are leaving on extra trips will suffer academically? Is that not something we should be worried about? They're okay, I guess, is what I'm asking.
Yeah, and obviously the communication with teachers and working with them to get their work prior to leaving for these trips is always an encouragement. And then also, you know, when they get back, I know that there's not a lot of downtime on these track meets to be able to find the time to do that, because you're at the track all day. You know, it's just a long competition. But I do know that the expectation is for these kids academically, that's number one for sure. And I think just in looking at previous trips, these kids have done very well with that.
Okay.
I also think that they have, correct me, but I think on some of these trips they have not had to miss any school, or they've missed less school than is less than the minimum, than the maximum.
Yeah.
So it might be one day or 0 days they missed on some previous trip.
Yeah, we have two trips, the two St. George trips. The one trip, there was no school on a Friday, and so they went down and did not miss any school at all and came back Saturday after their competition was over. The other St. George trip to Pineview with just one day of school, and the Arcadia trip is only going to be 2 days. So there's 3 days of school right now that they miss, which is one over. If they were only to do one trip based on policy of missing 2 days of school, ultimately the total is going to be 6 days, if my math's not right, if my math's right, that they'll miss. Or actually five.
I have a question. Is it impossible for student athletes to participate if their parents took them to this meet? Or is it absolutely necessary that they go with coaches from their school to be able to participate?
So my understanding is typically what's required is to enter as a high school, right? So you're entering these as a high school. That was a concern that we had in the past, that you know, using Harriman High School as a name or whatever that is. We oftentimes get groups, organizations that are running these meets, and it's not just track, and I can think of wrestling, where they would require the principal or a check from the school. So I can't speak specifically to that particular one, but in many cases, the organizers of the track meets are expecting and asking that you're entering as a high school team.
So generally, there aren't any club teams that participate in these meets?
Not in this particular one, is my understanding. This is a national high school meet.
That's my guess, Lisa. I'm not knowing the details of that particular, but I do believe that it's specific to high school.
And so a check, like to pay for entry, it would need to be signed by principal of the school.
Typically that's the case, yeah.
I am curious. I know that we have written in an exception for going to regionals or things that they qualify for, right?
Uh-huh.
So do you know or anticipate maybe how many days, one or two, they might miss if they qualify for a regional meet and then a national meet? Like, will these students be missing more and more school, I suppose?
Yeah, I think there's potential of another national competition that they may achieve that qualification. I can't speak to when that national trip is, but I would guess that there might be something in May that, as they compete in these other ones, that something down the road might exist as an opportunity as well. So that's pretty typical for them to compete, you know, and those regional and national competitions have specific meets that require them to compete in. Like, this is kind of an approved meet, if you will, that you can achieve that qualifying time, and if you achieve that qualifying time, you would be eligible to compete in nationals. And so that's a pretty typical practice to see that progression, and our policy does allow. So if it's a national progression, a natural progression like that, mm-hmm. in competing, then we would go ahead and allow them to continue to move forward, and that wouldn't necessarily need to come here for approval. Yeah.
Why wasn't this brought to us when they asked for an exception before?
We brought this as soon as the next board meeting was available after review. Is that what you mean?
Yeah, so they didn't know about this when they asked for the exception.
They provided this to us 50 days, so our policy requires 45 days in advance. They provided this 50 days to my office. It does take some processing. So when we received this particular request, it was on Wednesday, March 4th, and I actually just didn't see the document come through before we would have had to have that for the previous board meeting, which was March 14th. So typically we try to get that in on the Friday before board meeting. So we brought it to the next available board meeting once we saw the request. So they met the policy of 45 days. And we typically like to have 7 days of processing to look for things and to make sure I'm in the office, Mike's in the office, or whoever has a chance to look at that. Then we realize that this one needs to come to the board for approval. So here we are.
I guess I'm just concerned because it just seems like their season's not planned out real well. Throwing this in, you know, and...
I can speak to that. I think it is planned out. We're planning on going to all these meets and just following the policy of the board, you know, just as Brad alluded to, of getting it in within the time frame that you needed to get in. I think what you're asking is that why was this not included with the other exception based on when we came in here to talk through the other trip?
Yeah.
Yeah, it probably would have been easier to do it that way, but you know, we're still following the policy to try to get this approved. So
I just see the exception as like a rare thing, and this is like a repeated thing. And so how many of these are we going to get from the same program, same team? I would have much rather had approved several of them at one time so I have a whole picture of them than piecemeal it.
Okay.
That's just me. I represent the rest of the board.
So I think one question that I have is a policy-related question. So when I look at 2A9, it really appears to me that this is a trip. If a school group or team desires an additional trip beyond the allowed trip. So to me, that is singular. That is the policy that I approved, and we've already approved one exception. In speaking to other board members, I understand that there's some confusion in that wording, but I feel like we really have gone out on a limb by doubling travel in this policy, and even beyond that, by providing an exception to the same team. I am quite concerned that we're setting a precedent that I'm not comfortable with by approving a fourth trip, which inevitably, considering the success of this extraordinary team, I think they will qualify for nationals. So I want to keep those things in mind as we make a decision, that this is really us defining our own policy. And for me, education first. So I want students to have opportunities. I think that this is wonderful. But the words that I read when we define why we travel are words like essential experiences that can't be experienced otherwise. And I see that they have an opportunity to compete below sea level already approved. So I have a lot of concerns with a yes on this one.
And I am concerned about every time students go on an overnight trip, there is a risk of liability, and I do not want to increase that risk with increasing the number of trips, and that is a big concern. And like Nikki, when I read 2A, was it 2A in the policy AA414, I also see an exception as a singular exception may be granted, and I feel like an exception has already been granted to this program for this season.
As the sponsor of this policy, that wrote this policy, that was not our intention. That was not my intention to be read that way.
As the person who voted for this policy, that's the way I read it.
And I did not vote for this policy, but that's how I read it now. I should say policy adjustment, like the change to the policy that happened. I didn't vote for that.
How many people are you? You say it's a lower number. Can we get, like, even if it's a guesstimate, like, did you already say
how many are going to travel on
yeah.
the trip? Right now, he put down 16. I don't see that there's going to be any more than that. It could be less based on their times for qualification. And he does not know yet who all those kids are going to be.
Because they have to qualify.
Correct. There's still other races between now and then.
What are the concerns among the... A couple of board members have shared some concerns regarding the interpretation of the policy and setting up a precedent of multiple additional trips. If the students involved maintain 2.0 or greater GPAs and pay the majority of the costs so that the district isn't subsidizing these trips, if that happens, what concerns are there?
I just feel like with increasing the number of trips and even distance for those trips, just statistically, it increases the risk for just a lot of issues. When I say issues, there are things that happen when people are traveling, and I do not want to statistically increase the probability of anything happening to our students at all.
Yeah.
So, and especially while under the care of the district.
So are you proposing we do away with all travel? Because I don't know that there's a higher risk for a team to take 3 trips than a team to take 1. You could have a bad event on a singular trip. Right? If you take 3, I don't know that...
Because every trip would increase the possibilities. I think that's what she's saying.
Maybe, but if you're that concerned, you probably should do away with travel, because a program can go on 1 trip and something seriously can happen.
Another concern that I have is the process here. So it seems like it's well known in the track community that Harriman will be attending this trip long before the board was ever made aware that it was a request to be made. Our policy definitely outlines that the order of those conversations should have been different. And so I'm getting calls from constituents from other schools, and that doesn't sit well with me either. It was like, the board's going to say yes, so this is just a formality for us to... And for me, missing school is a big deal. And for us to endorse missing school is a very big deal.
But if they're missing less school than other trips, does that remedy that and say, now we're okay?
Well, I think it's that camel's nose theory. In this case, it's minimal. But once it's well known, you can come to the board as many times as you want, then I don't know what can happen. And I was willing. I want kids to have opportunities. That's why I voted for a policy change. And that's why I voted for an exception to policy. But this feels like it's snowballing.
So let's punish the group that isn't missing school because others might?
The group that we changed the policy at their request. Then we extended the distance on a quick trip. And then we gave permission for an exception. I feel like we have come to the point where I say, okay, enough is enough.
And I think that punishment or punish is maybe a different word could be used, because this is not punitive. We are not taking something away. We're not giving a consequence for some type of behavior. We are just, like, if we don't approve this, it's not a punishment. It is just...
Yes, it is.
How is it a punishment?
This is a national ranked team, and we're not allowing them to compete at a race.
We are. They need to go to three.
No, we're not allowing them to go to this race. You've had enough. We're done letting you compete. But thanks for being a nationally ranked team and bringing a lot of attention to Jordan District.
And
we are losing athletes to schools all over the state of Utah. And now we're going to tell our best athletic competition that they cannot go to a meet where they're fundraising. They're not missing an extraordinary amount of school. We shouldn't be surprised if Jordan District keeps losing athletes, if this is how we act.
And while I love having opportunities for our students to participate in athletic programs, I think I've even said before that athletics is not my highest priority in public education, and specifically in Jordan School District. Yes. I appreciate all the opportunities and the lessons that it affords to our students. I love that. But it is not my top priority. And I feel like if students find a program or a school that fits them better, even if it's outside of Jordan School District, I'm sad to see them go, but I want every student to find the place where they can succeed. And so I'm not trying to make or interpret policy that is specifically to retain athletes. I want policy that ensures the best opportunity for all of our students to have a high quality, appropriate education. And so when with the possibility of athletes going somewhere else, I don't want to lose students from Jordan School District, but I do want all students to have the best fit for them.
I can give you 1,000 studies that say student athletes do better in school, and that student athletics promote school success. I can tell you that the vast majority of CEOs on the Fortune 500 were not Sterling Scholars. They were not National Honor Society, but the vast majority of them were student athletes. Student athletics brings success. It's sad to hear that's not your priority, because thousands and thousands...
I said it's not my top priority.
Okay, when you're done. Thousands and thousands of kids in our district, it is. They wouldn't graduate without athletics and sports and activities. Well, there's many people who attend charter school until they get to high school, and then all of a sudden, why do they switch to the public education? It's because of the programs that we have. You know, same thing with homeschool. That they want to homeschool their kid, but they want to take care of our programs. And I think I just changed my mind. I think I'm going to support this. I think this is a failure. The policy is a failure of the board, not our fault. But we needed to find that word. What's an a trip? Like, that's our problem, I think, is we didn't have the foresight to really see, oh, maybe someone would ask for two in the same season. And so I think I'm going to support this. I wasn't going to, but I think that this needs to come back to the policy needs to come back to the board and define what we really are. What are we wanting to do? Do we want to limit this? Do we not? I hate to hurt a program who's thinking that they're going to be able to attend because of the policy, and yet we're reading the policy different than they are.
So I really like where you're going, and I might be willing to make an exception this time. See, that means one. An exception is singular.
Another.
But I would need the policy wording changed, because I do think this is Pandora's box. And I'm cautious that this debate is going towards, you're taking away sports. No, we're not. Sports are alive and well in Jordan School District. And nobody, I think, in this room wants to remove these opportunities and motivations for students. I certainly don't. I do want to keep students safe. And I do want to ensure that we are being conservative in our approach. And so that's why I'm uncomfortable right now. Now,
and can I add one thing? If you're interested in safety, then sending them as a team with a coach is a lot safer than not approving a trip and having them all go on their own.
I thought we were just told that you had to enter a...
No, I'm just saying in general.
So I certainly hope that our coaches have more integrity than to find a loophole around policy and go rogue. And I know that there are people who might disagree, but I'm going to trust in the integrity of our coaches and the wisdom of our administrators to keep that in check.
But whether the coach does or doesn't, there will be parents who will say, I will take my child to this trip. I will take my child so that they can compete in this trip. It has happened, and it will most likely happen again.
And I think that a parent's prerogative to care for their child's need is something that we could not debate as a board. I want parents to have those choices.
I'm just saying, if your argument is safety, then it's safer to send them as a team under the direction of a coach.
And I hope we're not arguing. I don't want to argue. I'd love to petition the group and find the wisdom of the majority.
I move that we approve this trip for Harriman track team.
I'll second it.
Okay, we have a motion by Mr. Dunford, second by Dr. Robinson, to approve an additional exception allowing the Harriman track team a fourth trip. All those in favor, please stand.
We have some discussion, please.
Sorry, yes, I apologize. More discussion.
Rather heated, so I was waiting for there to be a lull.
Okay, question that kind of goes back to the meets that they went to in March. I was curious if those were qualifying competitions or not, and if in the future this board decides to do something else, can a coach be more choosy with which meets they go to and not, so they're not asking for multiple exceptions?
So there is meets during the week, usually on Wednesdays. Those are region meets. Mm-hmm. There are also qualifying meets that happen on weekends, Fridays and Saturdays. They're called invitationals. They're across the state of Utah. So those two that were down in St. George were qualifying for state.
Okay.
And the meets that are during the week aren't qualifiers. It's always the meets on the weekend.
Okay. So they were fairly important so that they could qualify for state.
Yes.
Okay.
St. George is also the lowest elevation in our state, and so a lot of teams like to go down there. It's warmer, the elevation's
for sure.
Lower.
Yeah.
So they feel like they can get better times down there. Yeah.
On a personal level, I know a lot of these kids. They're from the community. I don't represent the school directly anymore, but these are top quality kids, and they really have represented the school and the district and our community in a great way. So it's hard to say no to good kids. I do think that we need to rework that policy. I would have loved to see the two exceptions together. That's personally. So keeping the wording there and exception, and have the whole season planned out. I'm not sure how hard that is, but that would have made it easier for me to approve both of them at the same time.
So can I get a feel for how many board members are interested in adjusting the policy to identify that a single exception may be made for the same group?
I'm interested in clarifying the policy.
Me too.
Okay, so I just need to know where we stand on that before I know how to vote on this.
Meaning you may fully authorize multiple exceptions.
When I read 9, the first sentence, I would agree it is a singular exception. But the following sentence blows that up in my mind by saying all additional requests. It makes it unclear. So,
and to me, that is saying the board may receive requests from a variety of sources,
yeah.
And that's why that becomes plural.
So I think it's clear that it's not clear. What I hear is the concerns is cost both to families and the district, liability or misbehavior or injuries, and miss school. So the question in my mind, you know, is the board the ultimate gatekeeper of those things, or do we have other gatekeepers before it even gets to us that are considering those risks?
Great point.
I think with this trip, not being the entire team, but few, causes me to be more open to it with the policy as it's currently written. But I have concerns in the future about cost and miss school and liabilities, and so I don't know where I would land if I were to rewrite this policy exactly how I would rewrite it. I don't know if I would say a singular trip as an exception. I think that is my preference, and I agree they have a very similar competition available just in a few weeks. I don't know what makes this meet so exceptional compared to that one. So I can see both sides of this, but I have concerns with the policy.
I wouldn't mind looking at the policy in an organizational way, because as I was reading it, mm-hmm. I felt like it jumped around a lot, and it was a little hard for me to interpret some things just because I felt like it was jumping all over. So I would like to look at it that way. I feel like I could be seen both ways, singular or not. I tried to listen to the conversations that were had back in 2024 by this board when you guys were reworking it. So I'm okay looking at it again if that's what the majority of the board would like to do. Along the lines of Ms. Wood, because it is a smaller group of students, I am a little more okay with this trip. I know that activities and sports play a big role in our schools in getting our students to school, giving them that community and something to look forward to, and so that they know they have to have their grade at a certain level so they're going to get it there so that they can participate and be with their communities. And so I do want to support our groups and activities. I think this board would feel the same way. But yeah, so those are my thoughts.
Are we ready to move to vote?
Okay. Can I just mention one thing? I asked some questions about financing of these trips and GPA. Those are my two main concerns. If students are able to keep their grades up, I mean, as opposed to being in school, we already have virtual school where students aren't required to be sitting in a classroom, and we're okay with that, and students maintain their grades. So if these student athletes can maintain the appropriate GPA and they or their families are willing to pay for it, or most of it, I don't have a problem approving multiple exceptions per school as long as those two things are met. There was a concern raised, and I can appreciate Lisa's bringing it up as far as safety. But I'm not convinced that 16 students traveling somewhere are more safe than 16 students traveling around the district or being involved in activities in the district. So they can be 2 days up there, or where's this trip again?
Oregon.
Portland, Oregon. Mm-hmm.
So they can be 2 days traveling and in Oregon, or they can be 2 or 3 days messing around here in the district. And if there is a difference in safety, I think it's negligible. I remember seeing a study done by the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, where they were comparing whether or not a missionary is safer out in the field or home. And the determination was they're actually safer, that there were more deaths in that age group at home than there were out in the field. So I'm not convinced.
Eight times safer.
Is that what it was?
Yeah.
I don't know if that's a fair comparison.
Well, that's their statistics. They took the mortality rate of somebody who's home and the mortality rate of somebody who's...
I'm there. Just saying that doesn't seem like the same groups, but okay.
Well, the point is, I don't know that they're at a much higher risk of something happening just because they're away as opposed to being home.
Because
we
of the chaperones, because of all the things.
When they're and we are responsible when we endorse a trip.
What does that mean, that we're responsible? What does that actually mean to the district, that they're responsible?
That the accountability for that student when we send them on a trip with this school rests with the district. And when they are at home, it rests with their parents.
So the district would be
taking more risk on our insurance, so to speak.
We would be financially responsible if something happened. Is that what you're saying?
Yes. Open to
How would that work, Paul? Would the district be financed? I mean, would we be open to litigation?
It's very, very factual sensitive.
We require insurance on every student, travel insurance, and they have to be insured. So travel insurance for if there's a problem with the travel, but also if there's an issue. That doesn't mean we're not responsible. It just means financially we have protections in place.
Okay, I'm done. Thanks.
I could give you more, but we can talk later.
Okay.
I did want to add one more comment to my earlier comments, was that I hope that as steps are being made for groups and athletes to go on trips, that that would be an opportunity for coaches and teachers to teach students how to kind of solve their own problems of, I have something due, I have homework, how am I going to address this with my teacher, and to encourage them to be good communicators and responsible teammates and all of our characteristics. So I hope that our teachers and staff are also taking that into consideration and helping our students learn and grow from these other experiences, not just classroom experiences.
Great.
And I do think we're asking an additional burden on teachers every time we allow students to miss class. We all understand that when we say yes, and that's why I'd like to take a conservative approach. Okay, I heard there was one comment before a vote. Anyone else want to get something in? Okay, all those in favor of the motion to approve this exception, please say aye.
Aye.
And any opposed?
Aye.
Nay.
Nay. I'm going to say nay.
Okay, so that motion carries 4-3 with the opposing votes going to Ms. George, Ms. Dean, and Ms. Wood.
Thank you.
Thank you for being here. Board members, before we move on to another agenda item, it sounds like there is interest in proposed changes to this policy. How would we like to go about those changes? I think it would be very difficult right now for us to assign to staff, hey, go write your recommendation, knowing that the board is divided on what we want out of it. So in this case, I would probably recommend either further discussion as a group or an ad hoc.
I think a cooling off period would be good, and I would like to take this up in a month or so. I'd like to take it up like late May, early June, and have it in place for next year. But I don't know. I think I want to think on it a lot more than let's jump into it and change it.
What is the likelihood we will get another request before the school year is out?
Probably just increased it. Well, they have to have it proposed for 45 days before a trip. But apparently they can come to us anytime.
Clarify that last bit. I didn't follow that.
So our policy requires that they submit their proposal to the AOS 45 days before travel.
Yeah, but that's not 45 days for us.
That doesn't necessarily mean the board will see that exception request in any sort of timely manner.
I can say for me, I'd like to vet this more thoroughly, and I don't know that I will feel satisfied by next board meeting to discuss it. If the board wants to, I will, but I'd like to vet it more, but definitely revisit it.
Okay. Are you more inclined to give it to an ad hoc committee because we were so divided, as opposed to giving it to policy review?
Yes. Yeah, policy committee is for reviewing existing policy,
okay.
And here we're talking about policy change.
Got it.
So, in my mind, those are very different discussions. But if others see it differently or want to change that, we certainly could. So, Dr. Robinson, when you say you'd like to give this until, like, May, are you saying you'd like it to come back to the full board at that point, and then we decide what comes next?
Yeah, I think that it would be hard for an ad hoc committee to go and tackle it without knowing what the whole board wants.
Yeah, I tend to agree.
I do think that it needs to come back to everybody, and we need to ask some questions, like maybe in the process we analyze as kids go and have a higher GPA, maybe a 3.0 instead of a 2.0 or whatever. I mean,
a 2.0 feels like a real low bar to me.
Yeah. And so I think maybe the ad hoc committee can get into those details, but you know, we weren't anticipating this, but it sounds to me that this will come back from this program every year, which, I mean, maybe I'm okay with that, but again, I wanted to see them together, but you all might have been different.
That would have changed everything for me.
Yeah, I think that we need to talk it out, and then we need to maybe get an ad hoc order signed at the policy committee at that point.
So, board members, are you comfortable if we just add this to an agenda item in our May study session? We'll have time to digest what happened here tonight and maybe form more opinions, and then we can discuss it again.
Even April would be okay, I think.
Yeah, I would feel more comfortable giving us just a month, right? And at the end of April, the last board meeting in April, bringing it back. So it gives us all a few weeks, but not too long that maybe we forgot and then we're cramming the night before.
And I want the policy to in place before the school year begins.
For sure.
Really,
I think that's very important.
I've captured it in the spreadsheet.
Perfect. Thank you. All right. We will decide later.
A question regarding the 4-3 vote. There was some legislation regarding 4-3 votes for us. That didn't pass?
Did not pass.
Okay.
HB 170 would have allowed for a referendum on any board vote that was not a supermajority.
Okay. So in this case,
would have allowed for a referendum.
Someone could have prevented this vote from being effectual. Is that
there? Yeah, there could have been a referendum that's a very high bar with signatures and everything to reach. But yes, there could have been an initiated referendum.
But I'm not sure how that would have worked, because this event is happening in a month here. So I mean, what
it would have made for a great test case.
We are grateful we don't have to worry about it this year. All right. Let's move on to item 1B, a review of the process and timeline for school land trust and Teacher and Student Success Act plans and approvals. Dr. Anderson.
Thank you. This training is just in anticipation of you receiving school land trust and TSSA plans, and just a brief overview of a few things that we are required to go through. If I can get this to... Oh, there we go. We'll be going over the role of school community councils, what the land trust and TSSA plans are, and then just give you some timelines and updates. I think it's important to note that school community councils are required by law. Jordan District has done them since the early 90s, and then they were actually codified in the state of Utah in 2002.
The translation for those listening is, we did it, and then the state said everyone should do this.
That's awesome. I didn't know that.
I love that color commentary. The work of school community councils, obviously, is to represent the school community. They prepare the school land trust plan. They give input. They do not approve, but they do give input and collaborate on the Teacher and Student Success Act, also known as the TSSA. And then they advise and make recommendations to school and district leadership on various topics. Council membership is comprised always by the principal, who's an ex officio member and is a voting employee, and at least one other school employee. All councils have to have at least two parent memberships. The state baseline in law for high schools is 6 parents and 4 employees for a total of 10 members, and then at the elementary and middle schools that goes down to 4 parents and 2 employees, but always 2 more parents than employees.
Can I interrupt you with a question?
Please.
So if that is defined legally, why do we create bylaws at each school?
Yeah, the law allows for school community councils to change that baseline. And in order to do that, you have to have it stated in your rules of order and procedure. You have to have a vote. If school X wants to increase the number of if an elementary school wants to go from 6 to, say, 8 members, they can do that so long as there are 2 more parents than employees, and then they have to stay that way. The state guidelines recommend that they stay that way for 3 years. And then they, in their rules of order and procedure, they say, hey, we moved to 9 members, this is when we voted on it, and that's how it works. But there is a state baseline of 4 and 2 and 6 and 4. Those member terms for each parent member are 2 years. Terms, especially when you start a school, or they should be staggered. If someone has to resign for whatever reason, the council should get together and outline how terms can be staggered so that there is not a wholesale turnover.
Is that the school employee also limited to 2 years?
Well, that's a good question. So the member terms are 2 years. There are no term limits on the parents, so long as they have a child in school for 1 of the 2 years they are serving. Mm-hmm. School employees are intended to be for 2 years, but that can change, and that's often done year by year with faculty voting. I always like to remind our school community councils that the founding fathers were very big on the idea of public education. I love this quote from President Adams. This kind of outlines the essence of land trust. He loved the idea that there should not be a district of 1 mile square without a school in it, not founded by a charitable individual, but maintained at the public expense of the people themselves. And so there are, throughout the state of Utah, designated trust lands out there. And those trust lands are governed by SITLA, which is the School Institutional Trust Lands Association, and they can lease and rent and sell property, trade property. The revenue proceeds of that come to the state and are put into an account for the school land trust program. The dividends from those accounts go to the schools.
Mike, I have heard for many years, can you confirm this, that when the government, the federal government, allowed a state statehood, they required them to allocate certain lands for education? We were not a wealthy nation at the time, so what we had was land. So this spot of land suddenly became public education land.
That's correct. And actually, it started with the Northwest Ordinance of 1787, and as you went further west, more arid land, they were more liberal with how much land, trust lands, they allocated when they designated, you know, the township and the ranges and so forth. So the western states, as they were surveyed, got more trust lands than the eastern states in some cases. So in Utah, we benefit from that today. If you were to take every single acre of trust lands in the state of Utah, you'd have a state the size of Connecticut within the state. That's why that graphic is there. So yes, that is very much the case. So when it comes to the land trust plans and the TSSA plans, for the land trust plan, it does include part. It usually, they go in tandem, both the TSSA and the land trust plans do. The plan has to describe how the school will improve or enhance academic achievement. Behavior has also been, as of late, an approved goal that the school community council can work to and allocate land trust plans for. The money from the land trust allocation operationalizes the plan. It funds it. So if you want to increase your reading scores, for example, by 2%, one of the ways you operationalize that is to pay in whole or in part for a teacher to do that, to lower class sizes or add an additional reading aid or something that's paid for out of land trust. And this year, the amount per student is $187. The school community council must have signature forms. When they take the vote at the end of the school year, right around now, this month, they get the signatures. Those were due this year on March 20th. We have to retain those on record for 3 years, just by way of information.
Question on that?
Yes.
It seems like within the past 6 months, maybe we were talking about electronic voting for SCCs. That doesn't have anything to do with the signature form.
Correct. The signature form is separate. school community councils can elect to have provisions in their bylaws, their rules of order and procedure, to have electronic voting. If a member attends via Zoom or over the phone, they can stipulate that. It just has to be outlined in their rules of order and procedure.
And don't we have to first provide policy that allows for that?
Sorry, yes. They can participate, and the board must approve the policy, or they must have a policy in place in order for it to vote electronically. They can participate through Zoom and other things, and that can be outlined in the policy. The vote is an approved process, and the board has to have a policy to allow for that.
That is something I'm really interested in.
It's a trick, yeah. I think there are questions around like voting security, like having a secure way to establish a voting system and so forth.
I assumed that the voting was in regards to voting for members to be on the school community council, not necessarily what they're voting on during school community council.
So we're talking two different things here. So let me clarify each. To vote for the membership on the school community council, you have a number of parents that want to run. The voting for that is the one that Ms. George was referring to. It has to be approved through policy in order to be able to vote for council membership. The school community council itself can establish rules of order and procedure so that their members can participate and vote within the council electronically. When it comes time for the final land trust plan, they have to actually sign it as well. So, sorry if I wasn't clear on that. Does that make sense? So that's why the question of voter security comes up when it comes to candidates in a school-wide vote on council membership. And that's where we've looked into it, and the board has to have a policy and okay that before that happens. So currently, there's paper ballots that exist in all of our schools for voting on members of the school community council. Thank you. In terms of carryover funds, these are large allocations. They can be carried over from year to year, but if it's more than 10% of the allocated amount, the school community councils must explain why they're carrying over for 1 year. They cannot have more than 3 years of consecutive carryovers of greater than 10%, or they can get kind of reprimanded from the state, and they could be in jeopardy of not receiving their funding. The land trust plans, in order to remedy that, land trust plans can be amended by the school community council mid-year, if you want, just to reallocate funds and shift it around so that you don't have large carryovers. I'm happy to report that this year there was not one school in our district that had excess carryover. And for a district our size, to have all 68 schools and not have any carryover in excess of 10% is a big deal.
Speaks to excellent training. Thank you.
And to the great work that our school community councils do and our principals that are aware of that and cognizant of just when they need to change or amend plans. So we're proud of that. It's the first year since I've been doing this that's happened. The Teacher and Student Success Act, it's doesn't seem like that long ago, but it's been now 7 years that we've had this. This was set by the state legislature and gives money directly to public schools to address unique needs. The schools must follow the parameters set by the framework that the school board creates. In our case, the board has authorized a framework that revolves around professional development, academic coaching, and a school-based initiative. The school-based initiative is pretty broad and can be flexible to meet schools' needs. It does require input from the school community council, but they don't approve it. You, as the board, approve the TSSA plans. Does that make sense? And the allocation per student for this year for TSSA is $252 per student. So between the two funds, some of our large high schools get it's a good chunk of change that they get. And it can really impact the work that goes on there. Some important dates to keep in mind that are coming up here. That's why we're giving you just a heads up now. Final reports were going to be opened up, and they were due earlier this year, but they had a glitch in the state system, so they made the due date March 20th. Those are completed and submitted to the state website. March 20th was also the date that we as a district gave to our school community councils for the land trust plans and the TSSA plans to be submitted. Happy to report that that was last week and they have all been submitted. The administrators of schools now have those plans. They'll be reviewing them, and once they're done, then we will be passing those on to the school board on April 13th. You'll receive those, and we ask that if you can have those completed by April 24th. If there's any questions along the lines there, please give us a holler. We're happy to help in any way possible. Lisa Lesarge, to my left, is our TSSA and Land Trust guru this year, and she's been doing a phenomenal job with that, and I want to thank her for that. That's all I have for this. Any questions from the board?
Mike, in the past, you've given board members a rubric as if to say, here's kind of what you're looking for as you evaluate these. Here's a good plan. Here's a maybe not so good plan. Is there any way, given the makeup of our board, is there any way you could do that again this year?
We're planning on that. We'll send that along. The plans will have that. It will have a checklist. And then we'll also have kind of just a guide, like this is what a good plan looks like, and there are three hyperlinks, one for each level, where it will take you to a good example of this elementary, middle school, and high school plan. You can kind of see how they structure it. It's just a sample, but you can see the wording in there is really ideal and is exemplary. So those things will all be sent to you along with the plan that you'll be reviewing.
Any other questions from board members? So let me make it clear. They're going to send you these plans on April 13th. You have 11 days to review them and sign off on them. And that needs to be completed by April 24th.
I would add on that, that when you get the plans, Lisa has carefully vetted the numbers and made sure that the math maps out on that, so we've been having to go back and forth with some schools where, you know, just making sure it jives. You don't have to pull out a calculator and start making sure it adds up. That part has been, you can do whatever you want, but that part has been taken care of. You don't need to worry as much about that. And the state land trust office also makes sure that those numbers are in order. So it's more looking at the plan, making sure you're aware of what the school wants to do, what's their goal, how are they going to be spending their money? But the budget codes and the numbers, Lisa's been diligently checking those already. So,
can you give us just an overview of how a school's plans are evaluated after they've been approved by us and after the year has gone by and the money has been spent? How are they? How is it determined whether or not they were successful? Kind of thing?
Excellent question. So the final report that you see in the first bullet there, that's what the principal has to submit at the end of the year to account for how the money was spent, make sure everything that they said the money was intended for was actually spent. And there's this, you know, there's an assurance form there, and I believe we sent that out, week before? So once we got those, we sent those to you as board members. You should have those to compare. It's just an accountability. It's kind of putting a bow on the plan at the end of the year for last year. The plans you'll be getting on April 13th will be for the upcoming 26-27 school year. Yeah. Did that answer your question?
Yeah. I'm sure that information has come my way. I just don't recall seeing it.
I'd be happy to resend it.
How they're held accountable and whether or not they increased by 2% or whatever their goals were. Is that something that's pretty regimented? And if they continually don't meet goals, something happens?
No, there's no sanctions if you don't meet your goals. The intended target is what the school community council agrees to, and it's really the school community council that the principal reports to and gives the data and says, this is where we ended up with reading, or this is where we ended up with math. Mm-hmm. But there's no accountability to the state saying, we didn't meet that goal. We really wanted to. There's not a report like that. And the state doesn't look at the school and say, man, that's 3 years in a row you didn't meet your reading goal. Because it's up to each individual school community council to determine what their goal is. And some may really be focused on improving behavior. Some may be focused on improving science scores. And that may be their own two goals. Other schools may have reading goals. Other schools may have math goals and numeracy goals. So it really is dependent on the local school community council and the principal to determine what those needs are. They look at their data. Ben Jameson and Brooke Anderson provide them with any data that they need in terms of test scores, and they evaluate that and think, all right, what is the data telling us, and what do we feel as a community council we need to improve?
Thanks. And Mike, if anyone has a question about a plan, their first phone call would be to
me or Lisa.
Yep.
Okay. Feel free to reach out. Happy to walk it over. And we maybe touch base with the administrator of schools, but that's the first easy contact. And when we send those out, our phone numbers and emails, of course, are part of that, so you can reply right to us or call us.
I'd just like to say, from doing this last year, I was very impressed by several schools who were very detailed in their goals. You could tell they were very thoughtful and measurable, and I just appreciate all the work that our school community councils put into this.
Yeah, they take it serious, and it really is a testament to their good work. They start early on in the school year, September and October, talking about this, start formulating plans in the middle of the school year, and then the last month or so they've really been pulling it together and creating a plan. And most of the time you see them building upon previous plans or refining and saying, yeah, this didn't quite hit the mark, we need to tweak it to do this. And you, as you sat, this board is very good at attending those meetings, and as you sat and participated in those discussions, you've seen that firsthand, I'm sure.
Any final comments or questions? Thank you, Mr. Anderson. Let's move on to item 1C. Policy Review Committee is bringing back our first batch of updated policies, and I'll turn the time over to Ms. Erin Barrow.
Oh, okie dokie, great. All right, so on board book, you should have a red line draft as well as a clean draft. So if you want to open up GP 100, and is there any feedback, any questions, concerns that you would like policy review committee to take back, or are you guys ready to kind of push this forward?
It is not on today's agenda for approval.
Oh, there we go.
So this is more in terms of, should we put it on the agenda for final approval? Because we're trying to gauge the board as to how much you want, you know, what, how much input do you want to have, how much discussion are we going to have after policy review? So that's kind of where we are. Is we are not seeking approval today for a final approval for these policies. If there's no feedback, then great, we'll just move on.
Do you have something? No. Okay. Catch in your eye to see if you want to keep going.
Well, so maybe we could change the word from ensure to safeguard.
On GP 100?
Yes. The purpose of the Board of Education on behalf of the people of Jordan School District is to safeguard that Jordan School District achieves appropriate results for students, etc.
Mr. Van Coman has a question.
Please.
Ensure, from a legal standpoint, it almost sounds like you're promising, and people misinterpret it as ensure rather than ensure. So sometimes, while you want to achieve the best, there's just some, not one of my favorite words as an attorney. I'll just put it that way.
Do you feel better about safeguard?
Or something like that. I don't know that there's a...
something to indicate that it's not guaranteed.
Wait, is that?
Yeah. But that we'll do the best we can.
That's just
okay.
Just the topic.
What's the right word? We can wordsmith that. I apologize, I stepped out, so stop me if you guys have already talked about this, but I understand the intention behind losing at a cost comparable to like school districts, but I would love if we could add a word to administer's financial oversight. I'd like to say something like conservative financial oversight or careful financial oversight, something that indicates that it is our obligation to try to keep costs appropriate. Because I think that was the intent of that line.
Mm-hmm. What do you think about responsible?
Responsible, I like that.
Okay, I'm taking that note down. Any other comments on GP 100?
Other than thank you, Policy Committee. Appreciate you capturing a lot of discussion. So, thanks for that effort.
Welcome.
How about GP 101? Does anyone have any comments on that one?
I sent a question to Aaron by email regarding... Let's see... E, is that right? Yeah, in E, one of the enumerated things is respect for roles, and I asked her, you know, what do we mean by that? And she took that to the policy review committee, and maybe Bryce or Daryl can just kind of summarize the response. I thought it was really good, what that means.
Everyone stay in your lane, respect principles. Don't be so quick to jump in and solve a principal's problem when the principal should solve the problem. Respect for each other's roles, respect for legislators' roles, and respect for parental roles. And so we kept it generic for that very reason, to say, look, we're not just talking about each other's roles, we're talking about respect for the roles that everyone plays. I think we try very hard to safeguard the role of parents, the role of the superintendent, the role of teachers, and prevent board members from stepping in and trying to solve a problem that doesn't belong to that role.
Yeah.
That, so and hence the, I know where you were going. You wanted a little bit more specificity, but I feel like we kind of diminish the purpose of that statement if we specify which role we respect.
Could we say respective roles? Would that add a little more clarity, Brian, to what you were maybe looking for?
Respect for respective roles.
Yeah, that sounds a little funny, doesn't it?
Yeah, I'm actually happy with okay. What Bryce and Daryl and Aaron shared with me on that. I like the analogy of staying in your lane, you know, not trying to do something that someone else has a responsibility for. And Bryce also mentioned in our executive committee meeting that if we did want to elaborate on that a little more, it might be better in the BSD policies.
Mm.
Yeah, that this is more of just kind of high level. So yeah, I was fine with that.
Process-wise, I really liked how Brian sent that question. We talked about that for, I think, a good 10 or 15 minutes, and I think the process of that really worked really well. So, good question.
And it kept that 15 minutes out of a board meeting.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was much more efficient, and that's kind of how we approached it. We came up with a redline version. Aaron spearheaded that, sent it out to everyone, gathered feedback. We just feel like that process saves time, but we don't want the board to feel like you're obligated to accept a redline version that you are not necessarily comfortable with. These are the board's policies, and we want every board member to feel comfortable without necessarily taking a long time to wordsmith in a board meeting.
Is everyone good with the respect for roles, leaving it as is? Is there anything else from GP 101?
I have something on G. Anyone before G?
So I have noticed that depending on who the executive committee are, our practice tends to vary on monitoring and discussing processes and performance. Do you feel like this is too prescriptive to say we will do this every month? Do you want to just say we do this in a predictable pattern and leave it to the definition of the current board?
So I didn't read this as being required monthly.
Okay.
So maybe a clarity would be
at regular meetings?
Like yes, or even public meetings, or
the Board of Education regularly monitors and discusses processes and performance.
Period.
Do we want to define when?
Monitors and discusses processes and performance, is that what you said?
I was just reading it as you wrote it.
The sentence ends at performance.
Oh, just end it there. Mm-hmm. I see what you're saying.
That would match our practice.
Yeah, and it just gives a little bit of wiggle room for the board of the day.
Mm-hmm. I'm good with that.
If we do put a period after performance, we'd have to fix the where it starts to say including review of board activity.
Oh, yeah.
Or maybe just a comma there and take out at monthly meetings.
I think I didn't take the monthly meetings to mean that we will do it monthly. I look at it as our meetings are held monthly. Once a month we have the regular general board meeting. Anyway, I feel like our meetings are monthly, and it's not necessarily the review is monthly or the discussion is monthly. So I don't think it needs to be changed, but I'm willing to do whatever.
So you didn't read it as the frequency of the... Yeah.
We do later define when we will meet in policy, so maybe it's just unnecessary here.
Might be fun digging out at monthly meetings.
Could anyone read that implying we're discussing it outside of open meetings? Or do you think that's implied?
I think it's appropriate if committee is talking about it. It doesn't have to, everything doesn't have to be done in a monthly meeting.
I don't get that sense when I read. I was just trying to read it really quickly. Yeah. Could I define it that way? But I'm okay with whichever.
I think if we eliminate it, to Paul's point, it would be included in committee discussions as well.
Okay.
We could take G back and look at that. I can't remember off the top of my head where else we talk about this, Nikki. But I'd like to cross-reference, personally, I'd like to do that and see. I kind of like G the way it is. If you read it as a whole, I think I agree with Lisa, and you don't necessarily, it's not prescriptive because it's including other things that we might do at monthly meetings that aren't unheard of. But.
And just so you know, the way we have organized our committee, Erin had the assignment to oversee the GP, so that's why she's kind of stepping out and taking feedback. Daryl will do the ELs, and I'll do the BSCs. So any feedback you have, and that's why Erin is really the champion of these.
We're just taking them one at a time, unless you see a policy that needs to be worked on ahead of time.
Yeah, perfect.
So you're comfortable, or do you want direction from the board as to what to do?
The way I'm interpreting it is that some would like to possibly delete monthly meetings. Is this paragraph superfluous? Are we addressing it somewhere else?
So I'm going to kind of do some cross-referencing and let you all know what I find. We can talk about it in policy review.
Okay.
Great. If there's anything else, then I'm done.
Good job, Erin.
Thank you. Thank you, Policy Committee. This is perfect. It was really nice to save the wordsmithing for your group, and we appreciate your efforts. Okay, we have come to the end of our study session. We do have about an hour before our business meeting, so I would propose that we take a short break and then reconvene in closed session prior to going out to the business meeting, and cross our fingers for an early night. Anyone have concerns with that plan?
No.
Okay. Mr. Van Poman, can we adjourn to closed session and then take a break, or do we need to take a break, come back, vote to go to closed session?
I think you could do it either way. You just are, if you go on closed session, you're still in closed session.
Okay.
People can leave. You're not bound to the end of room, as long as you don't discuss matters outside.
I appreciate that. Okay, so anyone brave enough to make that motion?
I move that after a short recess, we convene in closed session for character and competency of individuals, property, potential litigation, negotiations, and security.
Second.
Nice.
And that at the end of our closed session agenda, we will adjourn to our regular business meeting.
Beautiful. Okay, we have a motion by Mr. Denford, a second by Ms. Barrow, that we're going to take a short break and then resume in closed session, following which we will adjourn closed session and move into our business meeting. Okay, and we'll do a roll call vote. Ms. Dean?
Yes.
Ms. Wood?
Yes.
Dr. Robinson?
Yes.
Ms. Barrow?
Yes.
Mr. Denford?
Yes.
Mr. Barnett?
Yes.
And I am also a yes, so that is a unanimous vote. We stand adjourned from our study session and will resume in closed session. Thank you to those who have joined us thus far. We'll see you again at 6:30.